This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Strike three. For Roger Clemens.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to stand up.
A new record. Clemens has set a major league record for strikeouts in a game. 20.
There you go.
He struck him out. That's number 18. That's the 19th strikeout for Roger Clemens. He got him. He ties his own record 10 years later from April 1986. On September 1996, Roger Clemens does it again.
Rocket, 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 rocket.
Hit and run Sunday mornings, 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Those highlights, amazingly enough, 10 years apart, the same man. The same feat. Our next guest, Roger Clemens, joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Roger, you are on Hit and Run, the Score's baseball show here on 670 The Score in Chicago. And Roger's joining us on behalf of the 2020 Ace Shootout, which premieres on Sunday, March 22nd at 4 p.m. on the Golf Channel. The event helps raise awareness and funds for the Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. For more information, visit aceshootout.childrensmiraclenetworkhospitals.org. Roger Clemens, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Matt.
And so, 20 strikeouts twice.
It was good to hear old, if I got it right. It's been a while, but I think it was Ernie Harwell.
Uh-huh.
Here at the Tigers, that's pretty cool. He's obviously a legend voice. And Joe Castig in Boston, I think Joe Castig's the only guy. He tells me every time I do some radio or TV for the Sox that I think he saw every one of my starts with 13 years with the Red Sox. So that was pretty cool.
And he's still doing games, which is absolutely amazing. In this town, we're, you know, a lot of people mildly obsessed with Kerry Wood striking out 20 in 1998. Yeah. Max Scherzer did it in 2016, but you did it twice. Outrageous. Roger Clemens, for a lot of us, the young fireballer, that's who you are forever in our eyes. Like that kid that burst onto the scene in 84, back-to-back Cy Youngs in 86 and 87 with the Red Sox. I kind of forever measure young fireballing phenoms against what it felt like to see you and Dwight Gooden show up.
Yeah, Doc, yeah, there you go.
You know?
Like I said, I work with about a handful of the teams, and when I, whether I'm visiting with the staff, the coaching staff, or we go down and pull all the minor league guys together and visit with them, I always do a little fun little chart, list about, I don't know, 25, 30 names, current and past. And then I have a category, Matt, that I tell them to try and put these guys into: power pitcher, power thrower. And there's a big difference. You know, I was fortunate that, you know, I was a power pitcher, so I didn't have my plus-plus fastball. You know, I still pitch, but I learned that really in high school and on through the University of Texas and so on and so forth. So and then I was fortunate to play about, I don't know, maybe a month and a half when I was in Boston. We acquired Tom Seaver, the ultimate power pitcher. I mean, watching this guy in his 40s pitch, and add and subtract on his velocity, and of course had a fantastic pitching coach there with Bill Fisher, who I think he passed away not too long ago. We went up and did his funeral in Council Bluffs, but Fish, I think to this day, still holds the record for not allowing a walk in like 91 consecutive innings. So he made the point. Obviously, he was with me on my first 20-strikeout game, and he made the comment after the game, after everybody left the locker room. I was sitting there icing, still trying to, you know, process what went down. I didn't realize there was a strikeout record or anything, but Fish came over and was sitting there talking to me. He called me, you know, I just had gotten the nickname the Rocket by my teammate Bruce Hurst, but Fish called me Smokey after Smokey Joe Wood, and he said, Smokey, he goes, I love it that you struck out 20 guys and all that, but he goes, I'm more proud that you didn't walk a single batter. And then push forward to, what was it, 10 years later, I got a phone call from Fish, and he basically said the same thing in the Detroit game, that you punched out 20, but you didn't walk anybody again. So
yeah, how about,
that was pretty cool.
How about Kerry Wood did the same? No walks for Kerry.
Yeah, obviously, he was pitching against the Astros, so he was throwing some Bugs Bunny stuff up there that night.
So when you showed up, Roger, a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, that hard-breaking ball, and you were pretty much a two-pitch pitcher for a while, and you didn't end up that way, and that's what you're talking about, I think, of being a power pitcher and not a power thrower. Because later on, by the end, you had that devastating split finger. You called it Mr. Splitty, I believe.
Yeah, I agree.
But there was what? There was a slider. There was, by the end, the arsenal was wide, but you were two pitches at first, right?
Yeah, I was fastball, curveball, and my third pitch was a straight changeup. And then when I got to Boston, Bill Fisher showed me a true slider, which was similar to, you know, a cutter. But with just a little more downward break, and I had that. I also hosted a golf tournament for many years with Mike Scott of the Astros, and Roger Craig came into town, and we talked about the split finger a little bit. And I had it in my weaponry, but I didn't really feature it a lot till the late 80s, early 90s. But then when, you know, the TV and the Sports Center and all the stuff would – you know, they would show your highlights of your game, and they would show 7, 8 strikeouts with that split. It was, you know, the thought was in a lot of hitters' minds. So I always tell the kids, or even the pros that we talk to that are incorporating the split, you're right. It's a very easy pitch to throw. It's a devastating pitch if you use it properly. And you know, again, it was a great weapon to have. If I threw 120, 130 pitch game, I might feature it 20 times. But you see, like, again, you see people would see it with 6 or 7 strikeouts, 8 strikeouts, whatever, and it would be ingrained in their mind. So it was a good weapon to have.
More than 350 wins in the live ball era. There are 3 men, Warren Spahn, Greg Maddux, and our guest, Roger Clemens. And the win, obviously, a stat that's dying a little bit, so I don't think anybody's going to be joining you there anytime real soon. You know, I don't, it's easy to forget you were part of the 2001 World Series. You were brilliant against Curt Schilling in Game 7. I think 6 innings, 10 strikeouts before the comeback and the Luis Gonzalez walk-off. I was wondering, that season, derailed by 9/11, paused, then restarted, this health crisis that we're in right now, do you remember what it felt like to lose the game, in the middle of the season right there for a while, for obviously understandable reasons, and the priority is low for baseball then and now, but this is a baseball show, but to lose the game for a while and then bring it back to the fans, you remember that experience and what that felt like?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, Matt, when you ask the questions, I mean, your mind starts, you take yourself back, and it's similar to what's happening now, because everything just came to an abrupt halt. You know, you look for the positives. I was when I have the opportunity to speak different businesses or things that I do a lot of these days, I talk about, I make sure, because there's usually always military people in the area. I played in 6 World Series. 2 of the losses were very emotional, and obviously for the 86 World Series, the ups and downs, your first World Series, the emotions that go with that. And in 2001, you have to look back. I was supposed to pitch the night of 9/11, so I was woken by a friend of mine in my condo, and everything that happened. The positive that I take away from it was my agents went to high school with General Myers, our 4-star general at the time, and they asked me to go to the Middle East. We went over there for about 7 days to see our men and women, and it was, I tell everybody, it was 24 years in professional baseball and all that pales compared to the trip that I went over there on, you know, it was like a USO tour. Good friend Toby Keith, he does a lot of them. And so I tip my hat to all these guys and all of our men and women. I saw things. First of all, I was just taken aback how young our men and women were over there protecting us. And but just their enthusiasm and their energy, you know, they're the, you know, I consider myself a team player. They're the ultimate team players. So I got to experience that. This virus that's, you know, out now, I mean, it's just, there's just so much unknown. And, you know, with everything going on, the emergency the president declared yesterday or the day before, and pandemic that's out there, and we're just trying to, you know, listen and do everything we possibly can. I was supposed to be on my way back to Florida to play in the Valspar Championship and do some stuff for the PGA. That was all obviously shut down, and so now everybody waits. My two younger boys play, one for the Blue Jays, one for the Tigers, respectively. One is headed home, and the other one is, I think, going to come back this way on Monday now, but a little different for the minor league guys and the big league guys. I think, as you know, there's some teams that are staying together in their camps,
yep,
which they have the medical personnel in the area. They have, you know, on-site where they can, you know, if they do go in early to work in the weight room or hit in the cages, they have, you know, a lot of these guys now in these stadiums now, they're so spectacular. I mean, they got – in, you know, they got full kitchens and chefs inside where they could have breakfast, lunch, possibly even take home a dinner where they don't, you know, they, again, can almost self-quarantine themselves and just try and stay in some type of routine until everything's figured out. You know, how many games are going to be lost? You know, I just think you work the schedule. There's so many different variables that you can work the schedule where you drop interleague play, maybe just play each team in your division so many times, do this, do that. And so we'll just have to wait and see. Just, yep, you know, a lot of these guys are such professionals and creatures of habit. They have a good, a really good routine, great routine they should have, that they can kind of stay ready. Like, you, again, go all the way back to where we got the phone call to get back in town from the 9/11 situation, get ready to go. And then I tell you what, I think I started it off in Chicago against the White Sox, and I mean, I was looking to the left, to the right of me. The fans in Chicago were spectacular. I mean, the outpouring, the love that they showed during that time. There wasn't a dry eye in the stadium. I mean, it was just super emotional. And you have to get through that and then get the game started and get your national pastime going and try and bring some enjoyment, you know, back to the fans and get their minds off of it. Like, again, right now, there's, as far as sports is concerned, you turn the TV on, you don't see anything.
Yeah, there's going to be people dying for it when it comes back. And dying for it is a terrible turn of phrase. I'd like to apologize for that, but you know what I mean. As we talk here to Roger Clemens on 670 The Score, I remember in 2003, the World Series, Roger, the ovations you got in New York and in Florida, and everybody thought you were retiring. And then you went to Houston, home, yep, and a friend of mine reminded me of the New York Post headline. They can be cruel, but the headline was, "What an Astro." And I wonder, can you laugh about that kind of thing now, or does that, like, make you angry to remember?
Oh, no, I mean, just how you look at it. I probably had three of my best years at my advanced age coming home to pitch, but yeah, I was super emotional, I think, in Florida and Miami against the Marlins, what I thought was going to be my last start, which started off very rough, and
yeah,
I had to get behind the mound and take a deep breath and like, man, I need to get it together here. I don't want to have my last start, you know, end up this way. But we battled back through that game, and that was a great series in itself. And then thought I was done, and then came home to you know, do a little work here and you know, do stuff with my foundation and all that. And then the Astros came calling, and it was a little bit scary for me, knowing that, you know, at my age, I wanted to go out there and be at least, you know, hold up my end of the deal. So I started getting my road work in and doing all the stuff I needed to do. And,
mm-hmm,
and the same thing after that, once we got to the, you know, we flipped the what was kind of a football town to a baseball town, and it was fun getting, having teammates that never experienced some postseason play, but for sure never been to a World Series. So it was fun doing that, and then then I shut it down again. And if somebody like Brian Cashman, who I have a great deal of respect for the Yankees, if he didn't call, I thought it was a prank call at the house, actually, when they first called. And, you know, Cash was basically saying, listen, I need you in my fourth or fifth hole on the starting step, but I need you inside the clubhouse, too, to get everybody going and on the same page. And so, again, a lot of respect for Cash when, you know, just as a person and as a man, as you know, we had a great relationship when I was with the Yankees. So, and, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, and you had an opportunity as an Astro, among other things, pitched an exhibition game against one of your sons, against Kobe.
He
homered off you. Did you groove it?
Yeah, don't remind me of that.
Yeah, did you groove it?
He talks trash all the time. He sees Pops running around.
Yeah, here. But then you kind of threw at him next time up.
Yeah, that kind of got its own play. You know how stuff gets blown up. But
yeah.
Yeah, I was on a backfield trying to get ready, and they brought about five minor leaguers to hit live off me. And of course they brought my oldest son Kobe at the time. And I get the backstory from him that, you know, normally he hits third or fourth or fifth, but all the players said, you're going up first. And so next thing you know, I'm throwing around, kind of locked in. I didn't even know he was one of the five, and then here he comes. And so I throw about a 92, 93 mile an hour two seamer just middle away to get strike one, and he rips it over the left center field fence. And I'm just staring at him, running around the plate. He didn't even let me get a strike in there. And next time up, I think I threw him a first pitch slider, and then I went fastball in, and it was in. But then, you know, next thing you know, he was throwing at him and all this stuff. Like,
yeah.
Guys, come on.
Roger, Dan Duquette, who was the GM of the Red Sox at the time, they let you walk in free agency, go to Toronto, and then New York and Houston, some of the stuff we're talking about. And I remember him saying the Red Sox and our fans were fortunate to see Roger in his prime. We had hoped to keep him in Boston during the twilight of his career. Ouch. And the twilight, of course, ends up being 11 years, 3 Cy Young Awards, 2 pitching triple crowns, 2 World Series, at least, or 2 World Series wins. Why was he so wrong? Why was he so wrong in 1997, I guess it was?
Well, it was a long twilight, I guess you could say. But they, like I said, Dan basically was putting his own team together. There was about 5 of us that ended up, you know, I think Mike Greenwell was one of them, who I thought at that time, Greenwell, you know, Greeny had the best, probably the prettiest and best swing on our club, but they were revamping, and it was a little difficult for me to, you know, again, you the assistant GM there who would run the river with me there in Boston when we would do our distance running, he knew exactly what I wanted to do. I was hoping to do a 4-year deal and stay in Boston and retire then. I think that had taken me up to about 2000, so. But it all worked out. I got to play for, you know, really when you look at it, I tell people with the Red Sox and the Yankees, I got to play for 2 of the most historic teams in the game. Awesome stadiums, old Yankee stadiums. It was fantastic. And, of course, Fenway Park is a cathedral in itself. And then, but I got the, 2 years with the Blue Jays was a great deal of fun. I had a lot of respect for Mr. Beeston. He came here to my house to talk to me about getting their team back to the ways they were in 90, I think, 1 and 92.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, shutting it down and having an opportunity to play for my hometown team was a thrill.
We talk about aging and pitchers a lot on this show because sometimes guys have to adjust and it's hard. And we talk like when that fastball starts to fade and guys have to change. Was that a scary time for you as a starting pitcher when you realized you were going to have to adjust?
Not really, because again, like I said, I was always a pitcher. So even the days that when I didn't have 95, 97, my arm was what, you know, say for lack of terms, it felt like it was underwater when I was out there the first couple innings. I had to pitch. You have to pitch to get through those. I mean, you win 200 games with your stuff when you have all your stuff in order and 3 pitches are on target and you're really dominating the strike zone, and then another 160 or whatever it was, when you win those games 4-3 or 5-4 and mm-hmm. you get out of bases loaded twice and you're exhausted after the game, you're mentally exhausted, but it's almost, you know, like you said, when when a Jorge Posada or Brad Ausmus comes over to you after the game and they're just smiling because they knew how hard a work it was to, you know, just to try and eat up 7 innings throughout that game when you didn't have your best stuff.
Yeah, you know, when the aging process is is showing its effects. Like, it's understandable to me that guys are looking around for help, trying to figure out, did people offer you help, Roger, in terms of medicine or magic pills? Like, that stuff was out there. Did people offer it to you?
Not at all. None of that. So, there was, again, I don't know what magic pills will make help you with the, you know, throwing strikes or being effective in the strike zone or being, you know, when you talk, again, when you talk about being a power pitcher, that's just it.
Yeah, I guess, those things I would think maybe would help with the durability or just being able to come back from injury or being able to be a horse and just keep going and keep going.
Yeah, I doubt that. Again, maybe early in my career, early in the 80s, you'd hear about the guys that were, you know, that came from the 70s and 80s, the old school stuff that they were doing. But, you know, like I said, I think I was my first couple years as a rookie, my, what was it, 84, 85, 86, mm-hmm. I think I was taken aback about how many guys that when I got there actually kind of like smoked and stuff, and they had those little kitty litter boxes in the locker room and stuff. So that was, some of those things were surprising.
Yeah. No, I know that you never failed a test, and I remember covering those Senate hearings, and you maintained that you never used any of that stuff. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We did it. We went about it the right way, but we, even more so, we stopped a guy from running around basically trying to make money off our name and things like that. I think I stated it properly after seeing what a sideshow, and of course you see it nowadays with what goes on up there too when you watch some of the congressional stuff too, that, you know, like I said, it was almost, and I like Jerry Springer. I liked to watch. He was funny, but it turned into that quite a bit. But we stopped a guy from basically making hundreds of thousands of dollars off my name, and we did it the right way. So,
how does it feel now in terms of your place in baseball? Because here we are, we're talking about all these incredible moments, Roger, and they all happened. You know, they all happened. They all exist. I'm still that 15-year-old kid who watched you and was in awe and will forever be that kid. But now baseball has, I don't know, Barry Bonds said this week he feels kind of like a ghost. Like baseball's given him a death sentence, and I wonder if you feel any of that. I wonder if you feel any
not
of that.
Not at all. Not at all. It's been nothing but wonderful. The work that I do with the league and the different teams and stuff, I really enjoy it. I probably do. Gosh, feel like you got to cut back. I probably do 40 to 50 events throughout the year. Whether it be a lot of them, a lot of them can be local here through my foundation and what we do, and. Mm-hmm. Just the other work, like you alluded to, with the Children's Hospital, they're gonna air that soon again. They're fun things. They're time consuming, away from family and stuff. I am Poppy Rocket now. My oldest one, I have two grand boys, so they're twin boys, 3 years old. I tell people I need a rope to keep them corralled up. One goes one way, one goes the other. But we love it. I mean, I have. Like I said, I still appreciate the game of baseball, give back to the game of baseball and everything I can. So I don't feel like a ghost or anything like that. Like I said, I think that my situation, we did it right. We proved everything we needed to prove. And like you said earlier, I not only on the Olympic teams, the USA teams I took, I did everything those guys would ever want or ask. And we were open and transparent during all the all the congressional stuff and everything that they did there too. So it was great. It was probably if I didn't have brothers and sisters who were really pretty pissed about the whole situation too, and other family, I would have told them to go where, but
they're pissed.
It was good.
They're upset about the situation.
They were. They're way past it now. We're so far past that. That's not, it's not even a concern.
Hmm. Hey, I've asked people around the game, Roger, like, how can guys who throw 100, I mean, these Texas fireballers, you and Greg Swindell and Kerry Wood, now we got Michael Kopech up here in Chicago, how can these guys who throw that hard protect their arms and last as long as you or Nolan Ryan did? What's the key? What should they be thinking about as they try to stay healthy and be that strong?
Well, it's totally different. I mean, like you said, these guys, if you're starting, once you get start approaching 90 pitches now, they go to the bullpen. I mean, I can tell you here in Houston, our last year, the World Series, I think the analytics took a World Series away from the guys here last year. They went out and pulled Greinke at like 80 pitches just because the propeller head said that, you know, at third time through the lineup, he gets, you know, somebody hits 400 off of him. And he gave up a changeup home run into the Crawford boxes here at Minute Maid, which is easier to hit a home run than, say, Fenway, where you got the tall wall, the green monster, to knock it down. And you go out and pull a guy who's our number three starter, who's really a number one on anybody's staff. And now with the injuries, he's going to have to probably step up into that number one role. And he gave up a changeup homer, I believe, and then he walked the guy who was the hottest guy in the series, Soto. And I think he showed, you know, Greinke showed a little emotion that you know, really don't see, that he felt that he had thrown him a couple strikes. And they went and pulled him. So, I mean, at some point, you still have to go do an eye and a heart test. You run out there and you look the guy in the eye, which happened many times over my career, especially in my advanced age with the great manager that we had in Joe Torre. And Joe would look at me, and or Mel Stoudemire, our pitching coach, said, "Listen, you, I know you're getting at the end of your rope. We can hear you grunting out there, and you're, you know, this and that." And then we would go to the theory of, give me one hitter at a time. So I know if I walk this guy, if he gets a base hit, whatever, I'm coming out of the game. So I'm really trying to empty the tank. I'm trying to get the game past the seventh inning, maybe into the eighth, so you can have the greatest closer in baseball, Mariano Rivera, come out there and get you maybe, if not three outs, maybe four.
Yeah, that's where our game, and I say our because I love it so much, but and cover it. But that's where the game is damaged, isn't it? Those middle innings. It's we've lost the art of allowing the starting pitcher to try and find it and figure it out. Yep. And I think baseball knows they want to get back to that somehow. That's what the three batter rule is about on some level. Like, they want to do some things to try and stretch the starter out some more, and they should, shouldn't they?
Yeah, complete games were a big deal for us in the mid-'80s, mid-'90s. You know, that was a big deal for us. I tell the guys, 24 years early in my career, they really watched my pitch count, but I was able to talk them into letting me finish some games. Middle of my career, not so much. And then the latter part of my career, they watched my pitch count too, because they wanted me ready for October and playoffs, and the extra games we're going to play during the playoffs. They wanted you fresh there, especially if we're in a situation where we clinched early, something like that. But there's a handful of the guys out there. You know, again, Verlander. I think Verlander wants to hang on to that ball at least to the ninth inning, and complete games means quite a bit to some of the guys still, if they can. You know, they want to finish what they started. But yeah, you would see that a lot in the 80s and 90s, where somebody would be coming out to take the ball away from you and you didn't want to give it up.
Yeah, 18 complete games for Roger Clemens in 1987. Nobody's even gotten close to that since, and they won't. Hey, Roger, tell me about the ACE shootout and the work you're doing for the Children's Miracle Network Hospitals.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've had my foundation, the Roger Clemens Foundation, is coming up on 30 years. We deal with at-risk kids, love doing it. My background was, I lost my father at a young age. My mother and my grandmother raised me, gave me my strong values and everything through life and that. And so when we get the opportunity, the wonderful people at Ace Hardware, when they call and they have these functions, and we know we can help these other kids, and they bring a handful of the kids out, and they're so cool. And so we get a fun trip. It involves golf, which I obviously, we love golf and chance to get outdoor and meet a lot of people through the wonderful game of golf. And so we have the shootout's going to be, they televise it. It'll be shown on the Golf Channel here shortly. I had one mess up on a short chip, which I was really mad at myself about. But other than that, the long drives and all the fun events and the breaking the glass where you're timed and you have to, break the pane of glass and stuff. My partner was Cal Ripken, and so I really enjoyed that. And to have Cal out there and going through this the first time, so
that's some pretty good.
Check it out; it's fun. It's all for good reasons. There's a lot of great players in the individual sports. Toby Keith and Colt Ford teamed up in the entertainment part, and our Golf Channel girls. They put it. They can play golf, so you got to keep an eye on them, too.
Hey, Roger, enjoyed the conversation. I don't think I qualify as a full-blown propeller head, but I do see both sides of that conversation, as I always have, and this was a nice conversation. I appreciate it.
You got it, guys.
All right. Thanks so much.
Matt.
You got it. That's Roger Clemens right there on 670 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.